burning platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
Well, luckily every week you don't have to hear me rabbit on about these things. You can get someone who really knows what they're talking about. Justice Malala, the author of the book We Have Now Begun Our Descent, which is still selling like hotcakes. Despite all the competition and all the other people who've also published books, Justice Malala's book is still right up there. And he's here this morning, as he is every Thursday, to tell us what's going on in the world that we can understand a little bit better. And it's brought to you by Nando's. Good morning, Justice. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're great. We haven't seen you in a little while. I was away, and then you were away, and you know how it goes. But it's good
so
to
nice
have you back.
To see you.
Yeah. So listen, we managed to avoid Fitch taking us down yesterday. Last week it was Standard & Poor's and Moody's. But the economy is not growing, and I think this is probably the most important thing that anyone's talking about right now, or should be. Don't you agree?
Don't you want to talk about the colorful part?
Yeah, I mean... They should be called the Color FOOL Party, right?
It's quite a thing. It's quite a thing. Can I say something? I wanted to talk about this a bit because you look at one of the things about yesterday and people choosing who's on the ballot paper and who's tops, mm-hmm. is that the PAC.
They were the top, right?
They were the top. The
PAC got top billing.
That's about all they'll get. Anyway, so the PAC is very interesting for me because there was a time, you know, the PAC, does anyone here know who the leader of the PAC is?
You know, I do remember for a while it was Stanley Mkhoba, right? Wasn't it? That was a long time.
That's a long time ago.
But that was the last...
They must have had 50s instead.
Okay. Well, was the last time I knew who the leader's name was.
I couldn't even give you one name, Justice.
That's the thing, you know. I mean, guys, the PAC, for me, I just want all political party leaders who are on that ballot paper today to think back on this. The PAC came into being late 50s. The ANC was seen as being too moderate. The PAC started, led by a man called Robert Sobukwe, incredible writer, speaker. The apartheid government was so scared of him that they wouldn't put him on Robben Island with all the other prisoners.
They put him in his own house.
They put him in his own house for years.
And he had no one to talk to.
No one to talk to, no contact with the outside world. That's how paranoid it was. But, you know, he emphasized pretty much like the EFF, land, ownership of key assets by the state, and so forth and so forth. Now, in the run-up to the 1994 election, the two main political players on our radar screens, on essentially on the liberation side, was the ANC, and the big question was who's gonna be number two, or will the ANC actually be essentially defeated by the PAC? The PAC was a big.
It used to be a massive influence.
It was a huge influence, and you know what? Today, about 4 weeks ago, I interviewed the leader of the PAC.
What's their name?
hold on. I interviewed the leader of the PAC, and you know, my first question to him had to be, are you the right leader of the PAC? Because right now, we don't know. There are factions. There's Letlapang Phahlele, who is a well-known veteran who goes back to the... he wrote a brilliant book, by the way. I think it's called Son of the Soil. About being a PAC guy in exile and so forth and so forth. But all I want to say is, we're in the run-up to the 1994 election, the big debate was about the PAC and how well it would do. The PAC got 1% of the vote. Today, the PAC has one MP, and every few months they change him. Because it's, oh no, you're not the leader of the PAC. He's the leader of the PAC. No, he's not the leader of the PAC. That's the leader of the PAC.
This is what Cope did, but on a much larger and much more time-constrained fashion.
Exactly. Right? All I'm saying is political fortunes change so quickly. And the PAC, in these elections on August 3, probably will get, if they get 50,000 votes in total across the land, they'll be lucky. But wow. This is the party in exile. If you spoke about, you know, the liberation movement, yeah. You'd say the ANC, PAC, Azapo.
Right.
Where's Azapo today? Where's the PAC today? So being first on that ballot paper, I'm
means
sure
nothing
one or
for them.
Exactly, exactly. And all I'm saying, all I was interested in about that story was the fact that, you know, those who think that political fortunes cannot turn should be very, very careful.
Who are you talking about? The president? Because he says they'll be here until Jesus comes.
So are you not going to tell us who the leader of the PAC is?
Yeah, please.
I forgot. Look, I mean, what's the point of committing? Committing it to memory when you know?
I suspected that they might. You would not know, Justice. I suspected that.
This is the first time Justice Malala has not done something.
I'm actually stumped. I forgot.
In not knowing something, he has proven his point.
Yeah.
You know, I mean. Anyway, he might not. He's the one who's getting the salary now of the leader of the PAC. But the PAC over the past 5 years has split into five different things. There's the APC, there's the PAC. They go to court fighting over this one seat in parliament.
Didn't Andile Mutama? He also launched some political party the other day.
Yeah, he's got
just before he had his six properties repossessed by the bank.
Black First, Land First, isn't it?
Black First, Land First.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, there you go again. This is someone who was with the EFF just a few years ago, months even. You know, he was top of the pile. He was an EFF MP. And this is someone who once said that if people meet this one activist in the streets, they must beat him up. So for me, it was interesting when he tried to hold a press conference.
And they tried to beat him up.
And he was saying, protect me, protect me.
He was squealing like a pig.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It comes back. Anyway, so you want to talk about the economy, Gareth?
Well, I don't really, because we just spoke to Anthea now. Basically, I mean, business confidence is really not looking great.
It's in the doldrums. I mean, there's two indices that came out. There's the Saki and there's the BER one. Both of them at record lows. Essentially, people who are trying to start their own businesses, people in business, they're all depressed. It's, you know, what's the meaning of this? Where is this thing going? Nice. And so forth. And then you get the news. I'm sure Anthea spoke about it yesterday. That the economy had contracted in the first quarter. That means that we're not in one place. We're moving backwards now.
Right.
Now, you know, I don't want to sound alarmist, but this once again underlines the fact that you've got to implement the plans that you have. You know, we talk about stuff in South Africa. No one seems to say, you know, I'm going to send the email. So it's like me and Mabale sitting here talking about, yeah, we should send that email. Oh, yeah, the email will be good. Yeah, the email is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
let's talk
about the email. Just send the email. And then, you know, by sending it out, you start a whole process. There is a response and you have to respond and you do something. But we don't seem to do something. So we wait and wait. And so yesterday, let's talk, you know, after that, the GDP stats came out, one of the things that happened was that Fitch said, we're not downgrading you guys. And you would have thought that we'd won something. We are amazing. Yeah, we are fantastic.
This is the thing. I was talking to Anthea about it earlier, and she was, you know, she was quite insistent on the fact of it being important. But here we were celebrating yesterday. Well, we weren't celebrating, but we were all quietly relieved at least.
Yeah.
And some people were celebrating.
Yeah.
That, oh, isn't it great that we weren't downgraded?
We should be celebrating when we get upgraded.
Right.
And saying, man, come here. You see, what happened with the city of Joburg, yeah, was that the same ratings agency said, these guys are beginning to run their books so well that, oops, you can put your money in Johannesburg because they're doing so well. Now, that is something to celebrate. That is something
absolutely
to say, man, we're getting our numbers are right, our books are right, and people are saying we can turn this place into a global phenomenon. That is what we should
celebrate. Ironically, these are exactly the people that the president wants thrown out. because they do not suit him.
I was speaking alongside someone the other day, and they were saying that, you know, this is the problem. You've got the ANC in Gauteng saying, we are going to show that we are the best thing since sliced bread, while on the other hand, they're being hit from all sides,
right,
by factions built, but many believe, around President Zuma. So you have a big problem there. My view is really, it's not even about what Fitch said and what the numbers show. We need to get out of these politics where we don't know whether the president agrees with the finance minister, whether we are implementing or we want to implement in parts. Where you have, and we've spoken about this on the show before, the president saying, oh, you know, you guys at SAA are doing a good job, while at the same time this is an entity that doesn't have a chief executive officer, doesn't have a finance chief, doesn't have a chief operations officer,
but and I've, so forth. I've started to realize that a lot of what goes on in politics is just plain, straightforward, bald-faced deceit. Like, you say one thing and you mean completely another thing, right?
Oh, I'm not that pessimistic.
I see this, though. You see people... I mean, like, there was a picture yesterday that someone posted of Praveen and Gedlehlekisa and the rest of the people in important positions, except, of course, for Mkabisi Jonas, was not invited. I wonder why. And they showed this picture, and I thought, these guys hate each other. Of course they've got to work together now. But that's a posed picture.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, unity is important in some of these things. Look, I mean, most times one has to do things that one finds not quite palatable, shall we say.
Mm.
But generally, I think we do have a problem with... Let me take what you say is, yes, it's absolutely right. You find me standing next to Ben and we just like, we hate each other, but we're smiling and holding hands and all that. And
right.
All that. So why don't we let that sort of resolve to present a united face to the world also work for us? If I'm a politician, I'm in the governing party.
Mm-hmm.
If South Africa is doing well, let's be fair. You know, at the end of the day, even if you're the worst, lowest form of politician, if the economy is doing well, there's more for you to steal. In these tough times, okay, when things are so hard, when unemployment...
And people are less likely to find you because there's more money around.
They're busy shopping.
Right.
You see? So, you know, come on, get on with it. So it's a win-win for all of us. But we don't seem to get that bigger picture that actually the better everyone does, the better for all of us. And you know what? So at the moment, you have the EFF in Parliament asking awkward questions. You have... everyone else asking awkward questions because, you know, times are tough. So make times good and, you know, maybe you'll be able to hide yourself from public scrutiny because people are doing well. The economy is doing well. Everyone is happy and prosperous.
Right.
But if you think you're going to get away with stuff under so much scrutiny because everyone is looking at you now, well, you're not going to get away with it. That's why you have such a spotlight on many of our politicians. They need to realize
right.
that actually make the good times happen and good stuff will come around.
Well, there are a couple of other things that we need to look at this morning, quite apart from the economy, and some of these are more important, some of them are less important, depending on your point of view. SARS paid KPMG $23 million for a completely useless report into that rogue unit that has caused so much consternation.
What do I have to do to be paid $23 million? Can I just ask? I mean, this is... Think about Nkandla, okay? Nkandla took 5 years, 6 years to build. 6 years to build, and we spent 246 million rand. These guys investigated Pavin and that unit for a month.
Mm-hmm.
23 million rand. Guys, can I bill you for 23 million? Can I?
And this is a reputable auditing firm. They should be embarrassed that they're charging the country that kind of money.
That's the kind of money. But there are lots of questions mm-hmm. about this report. Remember that these guys, when the spotlight was on them about what is this KPMG report all about, they issued a statement that this report cannot be used for resolution of any disputes or controversies. Cannot be referenced. So you can't say, you guys started an illegal unit, and therefore, Mr. Gordon, I put it to you according to this report. You can't use it at all to ask anyone questions about it. So, oops, here's a report. But
what's the point?
What is the point? You can't use it. So you pay, I can't use this. Here's 23 million rand. Thank you very much.
Who gets paid 23 million rand for doing something that is not useful?
It's not useful. It's not useful.
I mean, someone's got to be arrested for that, surely.
This question was posed in Parliament by Floyd Chivambu of the EFF, right? He asked the minister. The minister says, I won't comment on this thing. I went and asked SARS and they gave me the number. Here's your number. It's 23 million. I would like Floyd to really follow up on this thing.
I'd like Floyd to cross the floor and smack someone in the head.
No.
Because what? 20... I don't know.
23 million bucks.
23 million.
Okay, this is unconscionable from both sides. You know, they always say there are two parties to a corrupt activity, right?
Yeah.
Now, 23 million wasted from our coffers by a department or by a minister is bad enough. But 23 million taken by an auditing firm like KPMG is criminal. The directors of KPMG should be brought out onto the floor in Parliament and they should be interrogated themselves.
They should
for
be.
For charging that kind of money. It's outrageous.
But not. They should be brought out and I want them to be held to account.
Let's look up the directors.
Yeah. Who paid it? Who paid that 23 million rand at SARS saying, oh, thank you very much. I can't use this report. I can't reference it. Here's your 23 million.
Were they quoted that amount before they started their work?
Well, we don't have the details because it was so what happens is that in Parliament, you essentially, if you're an opposition MP, you can get some good stuff out of you because they can't lie. They shouldn't lie. All they can do is avoid the question. So you put the question to the Minister of Finance. He comes up and he says, this is the number that you're asking me. How much were these guys paid? And you say, and he doesn't give any more detail than that. I would like the South African Revenue Service to stand up now and tell us we were quoted 23 million. Tell me. So you go to SARS, you interview a couple of people, and you bang me with a bill for 23 million.
No, it's not right.
And these are the people who can't wait to take money from us and waste it.
23
Justice, you do realize when you talk to people, you've got to take them to hotels, you've got to entertain them, you've got to feed them. It adds up.
23 million. What kind of hotel is this? It was a holiday. 5-star all the way. Mauritius, Seychelles. What are we talking about exactly here?
Son of a bitch.
I can't tell you. I don't know. I mean, help me here. 23 million. This is such a big scandal. I can't believe no one's talking about it.
But Justice, don't you agree that KPMG should also come up with some kind of explanation as to what they did for that money?
I am shocked.
How
that
do you quote
haven't,
someone
they
that,
haven't said anything.
You could do an audit of whatever you wanted to. It wouldn't cost you 23 million. This is pure...
23 million.
It's outrageous.
It's a shocker. It's 10... Man. It's 10% of what we paid for Nkandla. For how long... What was in this report? This report, I'm sure, has solved all our problems.
That kind of money.
What is in that report? Maybe it should be released.
The secrets
help.
To eternal life. the way to boost the economy by 900%. All of that.
Who at SARS pressed the button that said transfer 23 million? But there's other questions that we need to ask, because if that report cost 23 million rand, there were lawyers hired by SARS to look into the same matter. There were, I think, several law firms.
It's probably 40 million.
If I know that KPMG got 23 good smackeries from that, I'm telling you, I'm charging the same. Yeah. What's to stop me?
And lawyers are not shy.
No, not at all. So, I mean, I really think this is, for me, the scandal of the week, and no one's talking about it. I just want someone to tell me what exactly.
Why don't you ask to interview the directors of KPMG? That would be an interesting discussion.
I'm definitely asking. I'm definitely asking because I just think it's, you know, we need to be told if when public servants do the same thing, we want them to account.
Yeah.
This is my money. I want KPMG to tell me what exactly happened. I want SARS to tell me.
This is my money.
Guys, it's your money.
It's seldom that you're so exasperated by something. No.
All right. I'm sorry. I just want to know how exactly 20. How do we get to 23?
How? Justice, you just got back from KZN. You spent some time down there. The KwaZulu-Natal ANC is in shambles.
It's in shambles. I have to tell you, I love the way they. So, first of all, last November, October, November, Sihle Zikalala wins the chairpersonship of the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal. He says, no, we're not going to go on a purge or anything like that. This year, boom, Senzo Mkhunu, who was standing against him, gets asked to move. And so he resigns, and Willis Mkhunu, gets appointed as premier of KwaZulu-Natal. Willis says no continuity, da 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 da. And then this week, just a week after he gets into office, he says, I'm reshuffling my cabinet. Four people out, four people in. I have to tell you, one of the things, because we spoke a bit about this last week, is the fact that the ANC and the SACP have been at loggerheads. SACP branch leaders have been killed.
It's assassinations.
It's hectic stuff that's happening in KwaZulu-Natal. So, one of the things that happens is that one of the names, Comrade Mtembu's name, is announced as someone who's going to be the MEC for agriculture. And he says, oops, but no one told me. Why didn't you tell me first? I mean, if you're going to announce that someone is going to be your MEC for agriculture, surely
you let them know.
You know, you get on the blower, hey, you know, Mabale, you're going to be the MEC for agriculture. Ah, and Mabale is very happy. I'll consult my family. Thank you so much. And
this is government, and it seems so haphazard. It seems so schizophrenic.
This is not just government. It's one party. It's the ANC. Your comrade, Mr. Mtembu, was for a long time the chair of the portfolio committee in the legislature on agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if his numbers are not in Willis Mkhunu's phone. It's not as if he can't get hold of him. But it's like, you know what?
Willis Mkhunu just does not run his phone very well.
Something's not happening here. Hey. I mean, just a WhatsApp message, yo, come. You're going to be in the new cabinet. Oh, I'm not sure. Yeah, come on. It's a deployment. Say yes. It's okay, then. And you're done. So, you know, I see you've got what is that Facebook on your T-shirt? Yeah. Why don't you just go on his Facebook page? Come.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, you're going to be the next guy. Call me quickly. Let's have a talk. You know?
No. It's not hard to find people.
It's not hard to find people.
If the ANC could have communicated all those years ago when they had to communicate in secret, they can certainly manage it now.
Exactly. So you have this ridiculous situation this week where it's, oh no, is it you know, is he in, is he out, is he in, is he out? And then, oh, I'm going to speak to my comrades in the SACP. You can't just call me like that and tell me that, you know, you got to ask me nicely, you got to ask me nicely. And then finally, he says, and this is a guy who's been very critical of Sihle Zikalala and Willis Mkhwanazi. And he says, oh, okay, then I'll do it because I'm a disciplined cadre of the movement. Boom, and it's done. And for me, it's...
What a mess.
It's just, you know, just get it together. This is you don't run your politics that way. You don't.
That's shocking.
Yeah, it's just not the way it should be done.
And then the last thing I wanted to talk about this morning was this U.S. terror warning and everything that's ensued since then. So, if you're an embassy in a country, you get your directives from the country that you represent.
Yes.
That country says to you, listen, we've heard that there is a possibility of some terror attacks, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. You've heard this happen all over the world. It happens in Kenya all the time with that mall attack they were warning already beforehand. The U.S. Embassy obviously has U.S. Secret Service as one of their sources. They have other sources. They have some walk-in sources. They have people who are in the know in the country. They have spies in other countries in the world. They might be right. They might be wrong. Sometimes they get it a little bit off.
Yeah.
But the intention on announcing that, listen, you've got to be careful for the month of Ramadan, it might not be 100% safe in shopping malls. It might be 90% safe or 60% safe.
Yeah.
Isn't it your responsibility to tell your citizens in that country, be careful?
The Americans do this with their citizens. They tell them, be careful, we think this. And it's because they're target. For me, one of the things I found interesting was that the Department of International Relations issued a statement and went on radio and so forth saying these guys, the information they had is dubious, allegations that it's one source, a discredited businessman apparently walked in and said, This is what it is. The Americans are insistent throughout yesterday afternoon when this became a major controversy that actually it's credible, it's multi-source, it's double-checked, and that they retain their security warning for their citizens. And, you know, by extension, South Africans standing next to an American. So, for me, I think the real discussion is about the relationship between the United States and South Africa. And I think over time you've seen, you remember President Zuma at the ANC National Provincial General Council about 4 weeks ago. This is where he said, you're making a big thing about state capture and so forth. But one of the things he said was that South Africa is the only place in the world where the majority doesn't own its economy. He also said it doesn't own its security arrangements. Gwedeman Tashe said about 3 months ago that the United States is trying to destabilize South Africa. And so you keep hearing these utterances from our leaders, essentially saying the Americans are up to no good in South Africa. And so the relationship, I don't think, is fantastic. The relationship is getting worse.
I hear the ambassador's been summoned to go and speak to Foreign Affairs this morning.
The ambassador is rushing off there in his best suit and a white shirt to go and speak to international relations. It would be interesting. It would be interesting to be a fly on the wall in that room, but it would be interesting to see what both sides say after this meeting. It was interesting that the presidency issued a statement saying, oh, we have cordial relations, we are good with each other, it's all good, it's all good. But I want you to keep in your mind as this kind of thing goes on, that South Africa increasingly is friends with Vladimir Putin and Russia. When President Zuma was ill...
Another man who state captured his country.
Yeah. when President Zuma was ill, he spent time in the Soviet Union, in Russia, with Vladimir Putin. A big chunk of what the discussion we're having about nuclear energy is really about buying Russian nuclear build. And you look at the rattling of the cage between Russia and the United States, and Russia saying, you don't do this, you don't do that to the Americans.
Well, this plays beautifully into the past experience of a man in the form of our president and many others in our slightly older members of our governments and our ANC structures, because these are people who grew up in the Cold War.
Yeah.
And they understood this. Now they're quite happy to be used as a pawn, just as the apartheid government were by the other side, by the opposite side.
I think what
in this new saber rattling.
Yeah, and I think there are huge elements of it that are Cold War type utterances and machinations. And so I'm not particularly surprised by the way the Ministry of International Relations, by the way, I have to ask everyone who can to watch that interview between our Minister of International Relations and Al Jazeera. And it might give you some idea of why.
She said she had a hole in her head.
Yes,
from carrying water.
And that was her answer. From that.
But that was her answer to a question about Parliament being in disarray.
Yeah. Well, you see, I mean, when you don't have an answer, you always fall back on, you know, I fought in the struggle, or I suffered, and so forth.
Right.
I
think victim is the king.
That's a problematic way of dealing with the challenges that you've been put in position to solve. So, I mean, the fight really over these terror threats, are these threats credible and so forth? Well, you know, why don't you say we have looked into them as the NIA or the SASS, and we don't think they're credible.
Let's also remember that the South African security services are the same ones who said a while ago that Thuli Madonsela was a CIA spy.
That's the kind of...
And Gwede was the one who reiterated it. So we've got paranoia in here as well.
Exactly. So we need to... I think it's part of the change in our relationship with the United States. I think it's part of that. If you look at the negotiations around AGOA, the agriculture agreement, it was very bitter, and there were all these sorts of allegations about American imperialism going on. So I think you're going to see a very fraught relationship between us and the U.S., smooth sailing between us and
China and Russia.
I think this is just a symptom of the bigger game that's playing out in this relationship.
And that's also because there's a like-mindedness between the president and President Putin.
Yes, people forget that President Zuma used to be the head of ANC intelligence. Vladimir Putin used to be an intelligence operative in the KGB.
They're both paranoid little security men gone mad. Really, that's what they are. So they're blood brothers.
I'm not sure, Gareth Cliff, but yes.
Don't you dare say that about Vlad. He's wrestled a bear with his hands.
So is Gedlitliki, sir.
Let's say,
he's wrestled the daughters of his friends.
Let's say macho springs to mind.
Well, enough of this depressing stuff. It's bad enough with our economy not growing.
Oh, I thought we had some good light stuff today.
You're off to KPMG. All right. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's every Thursday. If you missed any of this, you can listen to it again on the podcast as soon as that goes up, which will be in a moment.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.